In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
During this pandemic, there's been no shortage of interventions from all levels of government to help Canadians. I'm sure you already know this because they make sure to tell you about every last one of them. Sometimes they announce what the intervention will accomplish before they even make it official. Sometimes they make big promises.
The government of Ontario will make sure that no one gets evicted. We stand by that.
But a lot of those programs and interventions and suspensions and moratoriums and all of this stuff that governments made a big deal of at the start of this thing had a time limit. And for a whole lot of Canadians in vulnerable situations who still need that help, turns out time's up.
It was a day that sparked fear amongst many Toronto residents. Today, a moratorium was lifted on residential evictions, opening the door to hundreds of people potentially being kicked out of their homes in the midst of a pandemic.
York Southweston has one of the city's highest rates of COVID-19, and now it's seeing some of the highest eviction rates, too.
In this era of COVID-19, hearings are being held virtually through Microsoft Teams. They might not even have the technology to attend, or sometimes might not even get a notice of a hearing at all.
If you haven't fallen behind in your rent, if you haven't been worried about being tossed onto the street, then maybe you didn't know that the Ontario government's moratorium on evictions ended a few months ago. They certainly didn't make a point of blasting that notice out to all Ontarians. But whether you realized it or not, that moratorium expired. And last month, when eviction hearings began again, all hell broke loose. And now, the government is trying to find a way to clean up the mess. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Suze Morrison is an Ontario NDP MPP. She represents Toronto Centre. She is the official opposition critic for tenant rights. Hello, Ms. Morrison.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. Before we get to what's actually, hopefully, maybe about to happen this week or what's going on currently, take me back maybe for the past month or so. What have we seen happening in Toronto, particularly throughout November?
Yeah, well, what we've seen is a renewed political pressure that I believe is coming directly from the minister's office down onto the landlord and tenant board to clear an administrative backlog that's been created for a number of reasons. And that's a backlog of hearings that are in need of being scheduled at the board. Many of those are eviction hearings. But we know that the landlord and tenant board paused eviction hearings for several months this year as a result of a temporary eviction ban that was put in place as a result of COVID-19, a necessary eviction ban. Many folks lost their jobs, lost their employment, lost their income this year as a result of the pandemic, and weren't able to pay all of their rent. And they've fallen behind. And, you know, tenants need an opportunity to have the time and space to get caught up once they're working again. So we see a backlog of cases partially from the temporary shutdown earlier in the year. But to be quite frank, there was a massive backlog at the board before COVID even started. And so now we've got this double whammy of a backlog at the board, and it's taking months and months and months for folks to get hearings. And, you know, instead of addressing the crisis that's unfolding in our housing sector with thousands of folks about to fall into homelessness in the next few months as a result of economic struggles from COVID-19, you know, the board has decided to move its hearings into an online format so that they can continue having them even though our cities are in lockdown. And they're moving through these eviction hearings as fast as possible. But, you know, we're hearing from legal experts and advocates on the ground that these online hearings are just disastrous.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more about those hearings in a minute, but first I'm just going to play the average citizen who probably hasn't been paying attention to every last movement by this government or many others. I thought that at the beginning of the pandemic, the government said that nobody would be evicted due to COVID, and that's where that moratorium came from. Where did it go? When did it go?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I mean, those are Doug Ford's own words. I mean, Doug Ford himself stood up and said no one would lose their home as a result of the pandemic. And that's turned out to be not true. So the original eviction moratorium was actually tied to a court order. It was a judicial order that was based on the original state of emergency. So back in March, when the province declared a state of emergency, a whole bunch of measures were brought into effect. And part of them was, you know, in a state of emergency, people can't be evicted. What we saw happen in the summer months when the legislature came back into session was the Conservative government passed a bill that effectively, and they did this very, very quickly and quietly, and rammed it through the legislature in a matter of a handful of days. And this bill basically gave the government the authority of emergency measures, the power of emergency measures, without any of the oversight of the legislature and without having to be in the technicality of a state of emergency. So they gave themselves all of these special extra emergency powers with no oversight. But what that meant was, on paper, we came out of a state of emergency back in the summer. And so the government then went back to the judge that had originally issued the eviction moratorium and said, look, we're no longer in a state of emergency. And the judicial order stopping evictions was lifted, you know, under the, you know, legal assumption that we weren't in a state of emergency. But those emergency powers were still retained, just in a different way. And it wasn't like our communities weren't still in crisis. You know, we were weeks away at that point from the entering the second wave. And we're now up to, you know, case counts of over 2,000 cases a day here in Ontario, with several of our cities back in lockdowns, including here in Toronto. There's literally nowhere for folks to go. And a lot of these evictions are, you know, families, working class people who lost their jobs this year through no fault of their own.
Tell me a little bit about those virtual hearings. I understand you've seen some of them. Can you just describe them?
Yeah, I have seen some of them. I've sat in on a block of hearings. I'm hoping to maybe sit down on a handful more later this week. It's chaotic. You know, the first thing that happens when you sign on is when you have to remember, you know, your hearing. So if you're a tenant going through an eviction hearing, you're scheduled in a block. So you're given a couple of hours of a window, and you have to be in that call for that whole duration, and the adjudicator can call your case anytime in that window. So, you know, if you're a working class person, you may have to take a whole half day off work to even participate in that hearing to begin with. So if you're able to sign on, which is the first biggest barrier, we're finding that tenants aren't even getting connected into their own hearings for a lot of reasons. One, there's a presumption that everyone in the province has access to phones and internet and computers. And that's not true. You know, we're hearing heartbreaking stories of folks that are calling in to stop their evictions from payphones in the rain, from getting dropped from their own hearings and presumed to have abandoned their cases because their pay-as-you-go cell phones ran out of minutes halfway through the hearing. You know, that's a justice system that isn't designed for the most poor is not a just system. So there's those kind of issues where people aren't even getting into the hearings and connected to the hearings at all. And even before that, that's even if they know that they're having a hearing. We're also hearing issues with people not being mailed or emailed the notices. They're getting caught up in spam filters, or the board is sending them to the wrong email address, you know, or people are getting their notices in the mail the day before their hearing because of the delays at Canada Post as we go into the holiday season, and appreciating how much, you know, how stressed our postal system is right now. So all of these issues are happening. So now let's say you're lucky enough to have access to a phone, to have access to a computer, to have reliable internet, to have a private space, to have an eviction hearing in that's not an overcrowded apartment with six roommates. You make it into the hearing. Well, now you're in this block and they're riddled with technical issues, with the adjudicators who can't, you know, figure out how to keep people entirely mute, with disruptions, confused elderly tenants who don't necessarily speak English as a first language, you know, just kind of crying hopelessly and helplessly into the phone lines, you know, what do I do? What do I do? You know, they don't understand that they're in a, you know, a virtual hearing with dozens of other people. They think it's just their hearing, and they're trying to talk and be heard, and it's creating chaos in the in these virtual rooms. And then, you know, if you need access to legal aid, one of the most concerning parts from my perspective is there's no technological function designed into how the board is doing these online hearings. For you as a tenant to have private conversations with the legal aid representatives that are there, the Legal Aid Tenant Duty Council, without having to disconnect from the call after broadcasting your personal phone number and private information into an online public forum that anyone could be in. You have to broadcast your number, effectively doxing yourself on the internet, then disconnect from the call, and then Legal Aid has to call you, have a conversation, and then you have to successfully reconnect to the meeting. And the most heartbreaking example of why that can be so problematic was we heard of a case where it was a woman who was a survivor of domestic violence. And she raised that with the adjudicator and said, I feel unsafe disclosing my phone number in a public forum that my abuser could very well be listening in on. There has to be another way for me to connect with legal aid. And there was absolutely no accommodation made you know, no compassion or empathy to resolve that situation safely on the part of the adjudicator.
Why are they such a mess and who is responsible for it? I mean, I know your position is that in the macro, this is a failure of the conservative government, but I don't want to talk about that just now. Like, what's happened on the ground to make this such a disaster?
Well, to be quite honest, you know, I do think it's a politically motivated issue. Back in January, before COVID even started, there was this administrative backlog that was building as a result of the government not appointing enough adjudicators. Well, so then what happened? Well, you know, at that point, landlords and tenants were getting, you know, quite frustrated with the system. You know, both sides were putting in applications and waiting upwards of 6 months to get hearings. The system wasn't working before COVID happened. And so in January, the Ontario Ombudsman launched an investigation into the Landlord and Tenant Board. And for the last year has been working through, you know, what those, you know, systemic and, you know, frontline issues with the board are. The problem there now is that, you know, we have a government who now has a political target on their back with this forthcoming ombuds report that, you know, could be out any time now. And, you know, they have an eagerness to kind of, you know, cover the mistakes of the past and try and clear the backlog so they can say, no, the backlog really isn't that bad. And we've been working to clear the cases and, you know, fix the issues at the board all year long. You know, despite COVID, we're, you know, we've cleared the backlog. But, you know, that would only make sense if we weren't in a global pandemic. You know, at the end of the day, an administrative backlog is a failure that's secondary to the failure of not keeping people housed in a pandemic.
So tell me what's happening on that level right now. I understand there was a vote on this last week at Queen's Park. What happened?
Yeah. So the debate was originally scheduled for Wednesday evening. And when we came into the House on Tuesday, I mean, we were almost done. The House was only sitting for two more days. According to our legislative schedule, we come in on Tuesday and the government House Leader motions to adjourn the House. And at that point, you know, I was really quite upset because as far as I was concerned, the motion was far too time sensitive to be put off until February, which is when it would have been rescheduled for.
Tell me about the motion, first of all.
Yeah, sorry, I'll back up. Yeah, the motion is a motion for a moratorium on evictions in Ontario until the province is in a post-pandemic recovery period. So it doesn't tie it anymore to the emergency orders, but rather, you know, when we're considered to be in a recovery period from COVID. So that was tabled. So when we get into the debate on the motion to adjourn, I stood up and, you know, got into Calandra, the government House Leader, a little bit, trying to suggest that, you know, as a province, we can't be, you know, packing things early and heading off to for the holidays 2 days early while there's this important motion on the table. You know, we need to make time to debate this. And so in response, we were able to secure unanimous consent to pass the motion without debate ahead of schedule. So the motion technically passed unanimously through the legislature, although we didn't get the opportunity to debate it, which I'm a little frustrated about just because I think it was really important for the Conservatives to have heard the stories that we're hearing from tenants, from folks that are going through these hearings. And I think it was really important for them to have taken the time to listen to those stories that we would have been able to bring up through debate and to sit with that. But, you know, obviously the outcome of the motion passing was more important. So it was passed. But now the next step is, you know, the motion is basically instructions to the premier. It's saying your house, your legislators have unanimously agreed that this is the step that needs to happen, that we unanimously agree on an eviction moratorium. But to actually put it into effect, the next step is for the premier to sign an emergency order declaring an eviction moratorium, and he has that power. So the only thing holding up bringing the eviction ban into effect is the premier himself, and that falls squarely on his shoulders. So we're continuing to increase our calls to him directly to sign the emergency order and bring the eviction ban into force.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Can you give me a sense of the scope of what's happening right now and the urgency behind it? Because my understanding is these hearings are happening right now and will happen like right up till Christmas and afterwards. How many people are we talking about here?
Tens of thousands of people. The heartbreaking thing is, you know, it's not, you know, despite, you know, what some critics of the eviction ban would say, you know, it's not people that have been, you know, willfully negligent and, you know, not paying their rent for, you know, months and months and months on end. For the most part, these hearings are working families where someone in the home has lost a job as a direct result of COVID-19. For example, I think the best example is look at anyone who's in the service industry. In the restaurant industry. You know, you went through March, April, May with absolutely no income coming in. You probably fell behind in your rent, particularly if you live in Toronto. You know, even if you were getting CERB, you know, the average market price for a one bedroom here is $2,100 a month. CERB didn't pay the rent, let alone put food on the table in downtown Toronto. And if you're a single mom with two kids in a two-bedroom apartment, it really did not go far enough. So, I mean, that's the first piece. So you lost your job, you know, and but maybe you got into the summer, you know, the patios and the bars reopened there for a little bit for a couple months, you know, so as a, you know, maybe you're a chef or a server in the restaurant industry, you got back to work for a few months. You know, you started paying your rent every month on time. You started paying an extra couple hundred dollars a month to chip away at the, you know, the debt you'd incurred in backed rent for, you know, March, April, and May. You know, you were making good progress in good faith, paying every month on time. And then, you know, September, October hits and, you know, your industry shut down again by lockdown order by the province. And now you're falling behind again. And, you know, this is what these eviction cases look like overwhelmingly. It's people that are doing their best, that through no fault of their own fell behind this year, but are making their best efforts to get caught up.
Just to play devil's advocate for a minute before we continue with what needs to change, there's a lot of landlords that are relying on this rent to get their families through the holidays and put food on their table. I know some landlords are giant corporations that might or might not be out to just grab all they can, but there are also people who own these properties as income properties and they don't have many options either.
Absolutely. And I'm fully sympathetic to that. And it's why since day one of the pandemic, the NDP have been calling for a provincial rent subsidy to help tenants pay their rent. And when tenants can pay their rent, guess what? Landlords can keep the mortgage paid. You know, it's something that I know the Federation of Rental Housing Providers has been calling for a rent subsidy. We've been calling for a rent subsidy. Small landlords have been calling for a rent subsidy. It is a simple solution. And to be quite frank, we have the money to do it. You know, the province has sat on $12 billion of unspent funding that was allocated to emergency relief that would have been more than enough to help tenants weather this storm. You could have sliced the policy up, you know, a dozen different ways in terms of, you know, what amounts or how you do it or how you distribute it. But any form of a rent subsidy could have prevented the crisis that we're seeing at the landlord and tenant board. It never had to be this way.
What needs to happen before March or April or whenever we really start to come through the other side of this pandemic to fix the larger issues at play here? Is there a good faith conversation to be had between the opposition and the government? Is there any common ground that could use to address what's obviously a problem with the system, not just the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we need to have a serious conversation about what the landlord incentive board looks like. You know, this was originally intended to be, you know, a quasi judicial board where landlords and tenants could take their disputes and have them sorted out without clogging up our court system, and particularly our small claims court system. It was supposed to be, you know, almost a customer service like environment where people come get help, get mediation, sort through their problems. It has somehow over the years navigated away from that into more of a court-like setting where tenants don't have a whole lot of power anymore in that system. You know, even when you come into the hearings, it's the amount of judicial language that's made its way into those bodies makes it very confusing for the layperson to understand. You know, when you show up to your hearing and the paralegal that's there representing the landlord, because overwhelmingly about 97% of landlords are legally represented in these cases, and about 3 to 5% of tenants are. So right off the bat, you have a discrepancy in who can actually afford to have their interests best represented. It's the folks with money, it's the landlords, it's not the tenants. So there's already a power imbalance from the right off the get-go. And then you get into your hearing and the adjudicator asks, what are we here for? The paralegal will stand up and say, we're seeking a standard order against the client. You know, how many tenants understand that the word standard order means eviction, right?
Yeah.
We're seeking a standard order, right? Like the language is so codified that, you know, and especially if you don't speak English as a first language, you really do not understand the implications of what's happening. You know, and under Bill 184, which the government passed during the summer months, it's become even harder for tenants. I mean, they now have to file notices to give evidence at least 5 days ahead of their hearing. You know, they think that their day in court is their time where they can come and show up, share their side of the story, make their case, show their evidence. Because a lot of the times, you know, the landlord's version of the story isn't the only one. And tenants may have outstanding issues. You know, maybe they were partially withholding rent because the landlord refused to pay for pest control. And so they paid for an exterminator out of pocket, and now they're being taken to court for an eviction for non-payment of rent when there was a valid maintenance expense that the tenant incurred out of pocket and deducted legally from their rent, you know, but the landlord doesn't care, and they see it as a quick and easy way to get a tenant out so they can turn the unit around and jack up the rental prices. You know, these are the types of things we see, you know, and now tenants have to know that they have to give notice, you know, to raise a new issue in a hearing. The legal threshold and the legalese that's made its way into the board has made it, you know, quite onerous and difficult for tenants to navigate without legal help. And then side by side with that, we saw, you know, massive cuts to legal aid by 30%. You know, legal aid doesn't have the capacity anymore to attend all of these hearings. You know, it's an incredibly frustrating process. And I would say it's an absolute farce of justice at this point. When tenants lose, they fall into homelessness. And it is the social cost of that is, you know, the extra shelter beds we have to fund. It's the extra housing workers we have to fund. It's, you know, extra healthcare costs we incur when people end up in the emergency department instead of a shelter because they can't get a bed. You know, we pay for these evictions, whether we like to accept it or not.
Ms. Morrison, thank you so much for helping us through this legal maze today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Suze Morrison, Ontario NDP MPP for Toronto Centre, official opposition critic for tenant rights. That was The Big Story. For more from us, we're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can email us to tell us why Ms. Morrison's wrong, to tell me why I'm wrong, to tell me anything you like. The address is TheBigStoryPodcast, all one word, all lowercase, at rci.rogers.com. If you find this podcast in your favorite player and you have not yet rated, and reviewed. Give us a Christmas present with a nice one. I promise you, we read every one. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.